From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 9th, 2022. Checking the calendar, the Bucks are in Texas for two games before Steph Curry and the Warriors come to Fiserv on Tuesday. And the Green Bay Packers are not going to lose this week. They have a bye. And it's just 15 days till Christmas. The Swiss are looking out for planet Earth. Their head of the Department of Energy has a few simple energy-saving tips. Turn off your computer when it's not in use. Turn off the lights in empty rooms. And my personal favorite tip is shower together. That's not very specific, but obviously the more people in the shower, the more energy you save. It's a win-win. As Indiana Jones said, rats, why does it have to be rats? In northern India, rats are accused of eating thousands of pounds of marijuana stored in police warehouses. That's the worst case of the munchies I've ever heard. An animal rights group in Ohio thought they had a great idea. Well, they were totally wrong. They set more than 10,000 mink free from their cages. And yes, mink is the plural for mink. The little critters made a break for it and took off running. Not into the woods, but right down the middle of a busy highway. It was a horror. It took a snowplow to clear the pavement. It's even worse than being turned into a coat. And finally, not everything Elon Musk touches turns to gold. Twitter comes to mind. Let's talk about Elon's fragrance. It's the essence of repugnant desire that smells like burnt hair. Let me read that again. The essence of repugnant desire that smells like burnt hair. And that's how a perfume website described Elon's latest fragrance. And because of that review, people want it more than ever. It goes on the market in the first quarter of 2023. It sells for $100 a bottle, and they already have $1 million in pre-orders. I don't think Elon Musk gets the joke, but on the other hand, it is $1 million. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Adam Bailey, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Titting.
Well, there's a sucker born every minute, Max, and apparently a lot of those are looking for cologne. So appreciate, as always, the updates.
And probably need it.
Yeah, and probably need it. Good point. Tough week overall for the NASDAQ, really for the markets broadly, down 4% on the NASDAQ. This week, 457 points. The S&P 500 down 3.4%, down 137 points. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 2.8% this week. Closing at the bell, 33,476. That's down 954 points this week. For the year, the Dow down 6%, the S&P down 16.2%, and the NASDAQ a far more significant 29.1%. Yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury closed just slightly higher this week, up 3.57, and potentially in a pretty significant move, notable move lower for oil. Oil now down from its start-of-year prices, closing with the West Texas Intermediate crude oil down at $71.65, a sign that perhaps some of the early causes of inflation may have started to finally settle down a bit. Maybe a good place to start the inflation conversation. We had data from producer prices this week on the economic front. No Joel this week to help out, so maybe we could do some of the heavy lifting, Adam and Steve, on the economic numbers. But in particular, that headline producer price number showed that we continue to see month over month inflation numbers declining. Yeah, the number was a little worse than expected. The market maybe didn't respond as favorably as we would have hoped. And in particular, the core number a little bit higher than prior months. But at least from a headline perspective, seeing inflation continue to come down on a month-to-month basis.
And, Kyle, everybody's seeing that at the pump, too. As we all noticed, gas prices are at the lowest they've been since 1 year ago. And for everybody that was complaining about having to fill up their gas tank when oil was at $120 a barrel, it sure is nice to see some relief at the pump. And I think that lends into some of the reasons why these consumer sentiment numbers have been going up. The less we pay in gas, the more we got to spend in other places. And I think consumers, which is what Americans do the best at, like having that extra cash lying around.
Yeah, I think I like to tell clients there's no doubt that Americans are the best at least one thing, and you could argue a lot more, but the one thing we know for sure is we're some of the best spenders in the world. And so if you can start to get inflation under control, I think you give consumers a little more confidence about what that looks like. We saw that in the consumer sentiment number this week, the preliminary December reading, meaningfully higher from November. Some of that due to the fact that, you know, maybe we're seeing some moderating expectations for inflation, even if those expectations remain high. And Adam, obviously the consumer key to kind of the economic engine.
Yeah, I guess if we're going to get a sense on, you know, where we're going economically, you got to pay attention to how the consumer is doing. It drives roughly 70% of our economy. So if you can get a sense on, is the consumer still in good health, you know, where you can still get out there and spend and improve GDP. And, you know, one of the things that I look at is household debt service ratio to get a sense on, you know, just how much, you know, income is out there that can be repurposed towards some other spending. And even with the revolving credit up a little bit this past month, the household debt service ratio still near all-time lows. Yeah, we've been spending down some of the excess savings that we saw accumulated through the pandemic, probably about halfway through that excess cash cushion. And I guess my reading on that one is, you know, with economic conditions improving, the job market's still really good, excess cash on the sidelines, consumers are just more confident spending their income.
Yeah, and I think that's, as we've said for a very long time on this show, that's the key is consumers drive economic growth. Economic growth is at the heart long-term of profitability. And so if you see consumers having some confidence about spending money, as we saw, Adam, as you point out, in the revolving credit number, remember, of course, revolving credit is things like credit card spend. If you're more willing to spend on credit card than you have been, if you let those balances grow, it tends to be because you think you're going to be able to pay it back at some point in time. And I think what helps that is the labor market. What helps that is the fact that, you know, household debt service is still not a terribly large issue. And all of those things, to me, point to the fact that earnings, as we look into the early part of next year, may be a little better than what we expected, especially in some of those consumer stocks, you know, that really are at the heart of what we're talking about right now. You know, I think some of the other economic news to look at, looking at specifically some economic drivers with the Institute for Supply Chain Management, services sector measurement, looking at expansion again in November. You add in factory orders up for the 12th time in 13 months. All of this points to an economy that, while maybe not firing on all cylinders like we always hope, continuing to grow modestly. And especially when you consider what the Fed has been trying to accomplish in slowing the rate of growth to try to decrease demand and ultimately get ahead of inflation, well, that's a sign that potentially they've got some cushion to do what needs to be done to win that war. And we know next week the Fed's going to meet, likely to raise interest rates 0.5%, meeting again in early December. The market seems to think there's another quarter point of an increase there. And so, you know, largely, I think the path forward has been baked into the cake from here, and it's more about the language than it is about anything else. What I find so interesting about that, Steve, and this is a conversation we have pretty regularly, is how kind of the inputs influence what we're willing to take out from our portfolio. And for a long time, we used 4% as kind of a rule of thumb. Saw an article this afternoon from the so-called founder of the 4% rule, who seems to think that now you can take out 4.7% of your money, and the math somehow will work out to make that more acceptable, more of an acceptable number than just 4. 4.7 is certainly going to be a bigger distribution if you're looking to take money out, but I don't think, and I know you don't talk to clients about 4% being the right number year to year. There's a lot more that goes into it.
Yeah, absolutely, Kyle. And I think it depends on your own personal situation. You know, keep in mind that for most investors that have to satisfy a required minimum distribution, that 4% is a pretty good starting point, considering that at age 72, when your required minimum kicks in, the distribution percentage is 3.6%. The reason why we like 4% is a standard 60-40 portfolio means you've set aside 10 years worth of withdrawals in fixed income. That's 10 years of distributions where you know no ifs, ands, doubts, or buts where your money's going to come from without having to worry about selling stocks during a period when the market might be down. That's 10 years of you being able to rest easy at night knowing that no matter what the market does day to day, you don't have to worry about having to free up some cash at a time when you might be selling when stocks are at a loss.
Oh, and Adam, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, kind of the benchmark we look at so often for bonds, is two or three times higher than it was looking back 10 years. And so, you know, if you're talking about 40% of your money in bond as kind of this general rule of thumb, well, all of a sudden your expectations for returns on that piece should be a little bit higher.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to note that, you know, the 10-year Treasury got up to 4% this year. It backed off a little bit, you know, 3.6, give or take. But now that safe, effective withdrawal rate that used to be 4%, now maybe bumped up to 4.7, you can almost get that in Treasuries. And, you know, it doesn't take much to be able to have a safe, effective withdrawal rate of somewhere around 4 to 5. And I've always earmarked that as, you know, you can, on average, get somewhere around 7 to 8% from a balanced portfolio, right? Inflation tends to be around 2 to 3. Subtract those out. That leaves 4 to 5% as a safe, effective withdrawal rate where you don't have to worry about drawing down principal over your lifetime.
Well, and I think that's the key, right? Because we don't know how long we're going to be here, right? We don't know how long we're going to have to spend money. We don't know in the later years if we're going to need additional care that we don't need in the early years of retirement. And so having that whole pool available to you because you didn't spend it all down in the first 10 years gives you some peace of mind that if I need some additional care come 80, 85, 90, whatever it is, well, I've got all these resources. The other thing we often talk to clients about is this fact that, you know, we're speaking strictly of the assets you have invested. We're not talking about all the other assets you might have available to you to pay for some of those future concerns. And so a reminder that, you know, a lot of retirees have a house with a lot of equity built up. One more source of potential payments for some of those concerns down the road. And it's why it isn't as simple as just saying, well, take your balance of your IRA plus your taxable account, and here's what you can take out every year. The conversation requires a little more planning than that. And so a good reminder, I think, from both you, Steve, and you, Adam, that this isn't just rule of thumb outside of giving you a broad idea. It really does have to get back to the individual. You know, I think we're entering the time of year now in which, you know, a lot of things tend to pop up pretty quickly. You know, obviously a reminder for those that are 72 or older of required minimum distributions. We spend a good part of November and December reaching out to clients, reminding them of those dollar amounts. But if you haven't heard from us or if there's something we need to be aware of, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Remind us about that IRA that's not with Landis & Company. Remind us about that plan that you have some assets in that might require us to factor it in. But I think the kind of transition into, you know, Christmas and the holiday season in general gives us a number of things to discuss. Steve, you know, in addition to the money side of things, you know, we're getting together with family a lot. And so there's a lot of, I think, elements of kind of just planning that can be brought into the conversation as we get through the end of the year.
Yeah, it's a great reminder to make sure that your estate planning is in order. I know that a number of individuals don't feel comfortable talking about that type of planning with their kids, but as professionals that see this on a daily basis, some of the most difficult conversations that we have are with those next of kin wondering why mom and dad didn't tell them about that account they had at some bank that now turned up 3 years later, or how much money they may have tucked aside and they could have afforded that extra care that they needed at the end of their lifetime to make sure that they were comfortable. So have those conversations with your families. Make sure that your estate planning house is in order. And don't shy away from sharing with your loved ones your wishes, not only while you're still around, but also when you're not around.
And Adam, I think a reminder this time of year too, we tend to see windfall type gifts or year-end bonuses or those kinds of things that tend to impact finances or personal finances. But also a time of year when we're revisiting, for those that are still working and saving, what we put into our 401ks, what we can, set aside. Potentially a time of year to revisit what next year looks like for savings.
Yeah, and also that what came to my mind was some tax planning, because Steve, you were talking about estate planning, and this usually is the time of year where people start to think about tax planning for next year. January is just a few weeks away. Some of those tax documents that you're looking for, I always seem to get this question in the first few weeks of January, like, hey, where's my 1099-R? As a reminder, those tax documents go out at the end of January. For taxable accounts, 1099-Bs, DIVs, look for those probably towards the end of February, just an FYI and some of those tax planning year-end stuff.
Yeah, I think a good reminder that you're going to get all those tax documents, gather them up, put them in one place, and hand them over to the tax preparer all at once. Of course, if there are questions, we're happy to offer whatever help we can to tax preparers as they're putting that information together. Of course, never going to give that information without client permission. So know that it may require an extra phone call just to let us know it's okay to hand stuff over. But we really do want to help. Obviously, we don't do your taxes. We're not tax preparers. But sometimes we can help you gather some information that your tax preparer might need. So if there's something that you're looking for in particular, when's my 1099 going to get here? It's okay to give us a call and ask if it's ready. We're happy to let you know when we think it'll get to your door. Well, I think more than enough, given kind of the market decline this week, more than enough, given some expectations for the Fed next week. As always, we enjoy doing the program for you, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.